following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer.
Hello and welcome to The Leftovers. It is Friday, April 6th. I'm Josh Dunn. I'm joined by Dan Bauer and Anshu Khanna. Dan, how you doing today?
It's Indians home opener day. I couldn't be happier. About an hour and a half from now, I close my computer and enjoy all that Cleveland has to offer. Better than expected opening day.
Speaking of home openers, Anshu and I actually were able to enjoy a very beautiful, beautiful day at Guaranteed Rate Field. Anshu, are you still thawing out from yesterday?
Yeah, it was more bear weather than White Sox or Cub weather. Some snow on the ground. Unfortunately, our beloved White Sox went ahead and choked a big lead there in the ninth. But other than that, I'm feeling good. I have feeling in my extremities again, which is nice, and I appreciate that from you. And it was a good day minus the result.
Yeah, luckily we were able to get out of there before they did choke it away. Let's talk some NBA. So the NBA playoff picture is getting pretty crazy here down the stretch. We've got a tight race there at the 6 through 8 in the East. We've got a tight race basically from 4 to 9 or 10 in the West. But the big news yesterday was Kyrie Irving, with this knee surgery that he has, is now going to miss the rest of the season, including the playoffs. We'll start with Anshu. How big is this Kyrie news, and how much does it change the landscape of the Eastern Conference in the playoffs?
Well, it's huge. I mean, I think you can basically rule out, even with the greatest efforts of a very good coach in Brad Stevens, I think you can essentially rule the Celtics out of this thing, which leaves more or less. I mean, I know that you're high on these Sixers. I think it all depends on Joel Embiid's status, but it feels like it's a two-horse race. And after seeing what LeBron did yesterday against the Wizards yet again, I feel like it's a one-horse race. It really feels like it's LeBron or bust in the East.
Dan, do you think this Raptors team, now that Boston's pretty much out of the picture, as we said, do you think this Raptors team can give Cleveland a run for their money, or do you think it's the same old Raptors that we've seen in years past and LeBron's going to just work his way through this Eastern Conference like usual?
I think it depends on something that we've talked a lot about on this show, is the Cavs' ability to play defense, right? I mean, we've had multiple shows where we've talked about, hey, the Cavs look great, they scored 120, but they gave up 110. So, I mean, the Raptors is a team that can score, and if the Cavs don't figure out what they're doing defensively, it's very much a team who can beat them.
Yeah, well, Kyrie obviously is a big loss, but the Boston Celtics have played well in spite of the injuries that they've had this year. I definitely agree with you both. I don't see them, you know, being a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs here, but this does what it does for me is it makes that three seed that much more important. Because the Cavs, obviously, they're clinging on to a half-game lead over Philadelphia. But the Sixers have won, I think it's 12 straight now. They're actually playing each other in the next game here tonight at 6. This is a crucial game for both of these teams. So whoever gets that 3 seed is going to be looking at Boston likely in that second round. And then the 4 seed would play a very strong Indiana Pacers team who's looked good. They blew out the Golden State Warriors yesterday as well. So it's going to be interesting down the stretch. I think that, like I said, I think it's going to really come down to who gets that 3 seed, and that's going to be extremely important. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, and beyond that, I completely agree. But also, it sets up the possibility that in the Eastern Conference Final, you would again not have home court advantage. So hypothetically, let's say the Cavs get the 4 seed. Now they play, if they can get through Indiana, which they should, but say they get through Indiana, then they have to play without home court advantage against Toronto. And then say they get through that, you might have to play without home court advantage again against the Sixers. And by that time, presumably, Joel Embiid is back. So, you know, if you think about the importance of playing these home games, you know, that's a big deal. So for a variety of reasons, that 3 seed becomes magnified. And really there's a chance they could drop from 3 to 5 quickly. I mean, 2 games separate those three teams, and that's a big deal in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs have 3 games left. 2 of them are against the New York Knicks, the lowly New York Knicks. So I don't have too much of an issue with those games. But that Sixers game, like I said, I think that's going to determine where they fall in the standings here as we go down the stretch. In the East, Dan, I just wanted your take here on the bottom four teams, Pacers, Heat, Wizards, and Bucks. That's set in stone now that Detroit has been eliminated. Of those four teams, which one do you think has the best chance of winning a first-round series?
None of them. I mean, honestly, it's just one of those. The easy one is it's going to be the Wizards, who are going to play the Celtics now, likely, unless some stuff changes. So, I mean, the Celtics without Hayward and without now Kyrie, you know, that's obviously the most logical one. Any of those other ones, I don't think they have a shot.
Well, it could be the Bucks or the Wizards. I could see either one of them knocking off Boston without Kyrie. Obviously, Gordon Hayward's been missing the whole season since that first gruesome injury that he had in game one against the Cavs. But do you think the Bucks or Wizards could pull off a first-round series against Boston, aren't you?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I don't want to go too far down this road with Boston. You know, that, like you said, they've still played well without Kyrie. Brad Stevens is maybe the best coach in basketball aside from Pop. So let's not get too crazy about this. But I think either of those two teams, Washington or Milwaukee, would be a problem for Boston. They're lucky they won't have to run up against Indiana. Miami would not be a problem for them. But, I mean, Giannis at full throttle, along with Jabari now healthy, they're working him back. I mean, I think that Milwaukee is a real dangerous matchup for Boston. And Washington's just been there. We saw them play last night and how well they played against a good Cleveland team. I think either of those teams could give Boston a longer series, which again plays in the Cavs' favor since they should wipe the floor with Miami should that matchup happen.
Yeah, I'm getting excited. We're going to talk more about the Western Conference on future shows as the season winds down, because it's kind of wild there as well between 4 and 10, as the Warriors and the Blazers have kind of been on a little bit of a skid lately. So we will talk more about that on future shows, but I wanted to get to a little bit of NFL news. The Patriots sign Eagles wide receiver Jordan Matthews, former Eagles wide receiver Jordan Matthews, and Bills wide receiver. And Marquette King, everyone's favorite punter, goes to Denver to play for the Broncos, interdivision signing. So either of these stand out to you guys? Dan, we'll start with you.
I think the Patriots one does, just because of all the Odell rumors. So, I mean, obviously this doesn't preclude New England from going after Odell, but, you know, the more crowded the wide receiver room gets, the less likely, you know, a trade makes sense. And, you know, the Patriots have never really been a team to go after big time, you know, wide receivers. I mean, they've plug and played for, you know, essentially their entire Super Bowl run. So I think this makes, you know, in my mind, it's almost assured that the Patriots don't go after OBJ with this signing. The Marquette King thing is interesting just because of John Gruden and allegedly his issue with him of his personality and his attitude, and, you know, not wanting his punter to be so outspoken and, you know, pseudo celebrity, which, you know, old school football guys are back in Oakland, it looks like. And I think it was just weird that they let him go. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason to it other than they just don't like him. And then he goes to an interdivision rival, which I love personally. Like, I love the vengeance move by any player going interdivision and going, screw you guys, I'm coming after you. I mean, obviously a little bit less intimidating as the punter, but hey, I still love it.
Anything there with you, aren't you?
I agree. And Marquette King is one of the best punters in the league, by the way, if not the best. Now you put him in that thin air in Denver, he is going to bomb some. And he's got a lot of swag. I like him, though. I mean, he's a really good player. I don't really get the point for Gruden. It just seems like some kind of misguided old school football BS, but whatever. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Marquette King made the difference in some games because of how valuable he is as a punter in that thin air. As far as Jordan Matthews, I'm a notorious Jordan Matthews fanboy, which is a random hill to die on, but I just absolutely love him. From Vanderbilt, he's just always been like the only good receiver on his team. He was obviously banged up last year for the Bills, but, you know, for the Eagles he was really good. He plays the slot, he plays outside. He's a big dude who tested really well at the combine. I'm a huge fan. And, if any team could get the most out of him, I think that the Patriots are that team. As far as the Odell Beckham, the Patriots stuff, Dan, I'm not sure if you guys talked about this, but Jason Lockenfora basically came out and said that that deal that the Patriots made for Brandon with Brandon Cooks was not a precursor to a Beckham trade. They're not interested in Beckham. So it doesn't seem like, even though the Giants want two first and it seems to align neatly, that doesn't seem to be the plan. It looks like they're going to go for a quarterback, most likely, at least with one of those picks. So I think this is going to be the Patriots' room. They bring back Edelman after his injury. They have Amendola, or no, they lost Amendola, but they've got, you know, a couple other guys that they like, Malcolm Mitchell, and, you know, they signed another big speed threat there late last season. And, you know, you add Jordan Matthews to that room and obviously Gronk. I think that they're gonna be just fine with what they've got, and then it'll be interesting to see if they use both those picks or if they move up in the draft for a quarterback.
Yeah, that's an interesting move for New England. Obviously, they like you said, lose Amendola. They bring back Edelman and Hogan, who had some success last year. Philip Dorsett, Malcolm Mitchell, Kenny Britt, Cordarrelle Patterson was a recent signing, but they've got a crowded wide receiver room. But for Jordan Matthews, you know, he's got an opportunity here to come in and try to earn that number one receiver position on a Super Bowl caliber team. And I wouldn't put it past him to be able to do that, even with that crowded room.
Completely agree.
Ability. As long as he can stay healthy. And that's always a question, especially as you look at the recent history for New England receivers. But obviously, true, you can't think about that as you go into the season. Wanted to talk before, you know, we get to the end of this show here about the Masters. This is probably the only time we'll talk golf, but it's one of the most fun times of year when it comes to the golf world. And we're having some fun with it this year. So let's start with Anshu. Jordan Spieth off to a very solid start, shoots a 66, 6 under in round one of the tournament. Tiger, you know, looking okay early on. But what do you look for as we go into the rest of this weekend here with the Masters?
Oh, man, if Spieth is putting the way he did, I mean, it's over. Like, you can forget about it. He's already two up on Kuchar, and then the rest of the field is three or two under at the real contenders. So things can change quickly. We've seen Spieth choke big time at times here. But generally, when he's playing this confidently, there are very few players that can keep up with him. But if you look at that board, I mean, Rory's at three under, Kuchar's at four under. You know, Ricky Fowler's at 200, Phil's at 200. He's been there before. So those are the guys that are hovering around. And if he slips up at all, you know, they're all going to be there. So I got to ask you, if you go Spieth versus the field starting today, what do you got, Josh or Dan?
Dan, go ahead.
What you got?
I mean, I think you got to take Spieth on this one. I mean, like you said, if he puts like he did yesterday, he's just locked in. And
yeah,
you know, if he can, you know, he's already two up, especially if he can put another two or three strokes between him and Kuchar or whoever else makes a run today going into the final weekend. I mean, you got to take him. The Masters is, you know, in Augusta is obviously one of those places that can turn in a hurry. I mean, we saw that with Sergio putting up the 13 on day one. So, I mean, it's a place that can get you, and one hole can definitely do that to you. In theory, you don't do the dumb stuff that Sergio did if you're in the lead, but you know, it's happened. So Spieth looks great. I mean, he's playing really well this year. You gotta go him if especially if he puts up, I'll put this caveat, if he puts up two or three more strokes between him and the field, you take him versus the field going into the weekend for sure.
I'm going to disagree. I'm taking the field. I know Jordan Spieth has won this before, obviously. You know, when he's locked in like he is, it's a difficult uphill climb. But it's crowded up there toward the top. And, you know, three strokes separating a number of people there at three under. And, you know, you've got some big names there. Obviously, Tony Finau, who had that freakish injury after he hit that par three competition hole in one. Dislocates his ankle, and then he comes in and shoots 68, 4 under 68 for the first round. So that was pretty impressive. But you, like you said, Anshu, you've got big names like Rory, Henrik Stenson's right there, Charlie Hoffman, some of these big name guys that could make a run. And it's very difficult to hold a lead in any golf tournament, let alone the Masters, which, you know, is basically the most coveted green jacket, you know, the whole thing. So I think that the field's going to make a run here. I think Jordan Spieth is, you know, he's definitely going to be in the fold as you look toward, you know, and deeper into the weekend. But I'm, if you had to, if you asked what you did again, I'm taking the field.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are too many big names at the top here, but as I said, and I agree with Dan, like when Spieth is locked in, there's nobody that's better than him, honestly. Like with the putter, it's just unreal. Like he doesn't bomb off the tee, but the guy is just so, he's a killer. Like he's an absolute killer around the green. And, you know, we've seen him late, like last season, he gets going and he chips in and, you know, it's just, he's got that kind of thing about him. So I'm going to be interested to see it. I love this leaderboard right now. I'd love to see a certain Tiger Woods make his way up, but right now I would definitely settle for Fowler, Mickelson, you know, Cabrera-Bayo, Rory, Finau, Kuchar, Spieth. I'll definitely take that group.
How about Sergio? Speaking of, his jacket, the winner last year, he has a 5 into the water, 13 on 15, basically putting him out of contention. It'll be unlikely he even makes the cut. Went on to birdie the next hole there on 16, the par 3, but just not a great day for Sergio. And looking at a 81, I just, do you think there's any chance he makes the cut after today?
No, I shouldn't say that. He it looks like the cut line's projected to be around 4 over, so if he has like a Spieth day, it's not out of the complete realm of possibility that he makes it, but man, he's got to turn things around in a hurry. And, you know, he's as good as anybody also, but I can't imagine him, you know, the best, funniest part about it is that he's got to stay all weekend, right?
Yeah.
He's got to hang out in Augusta to give away the jacket. So going to be a long weekend for Sergio. He might need to acquaint himself to the Atlanta bar scene there on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on the Masters from start to finish here as the weekend roars on. Obviously, some guys already underway.
I see what you did there.
But I did want to keep this show relatively short. Let's get it to your guys. Oh, by the way, Dan, we'll start with you.
Well, in honor of you, and I apologize if I'm jumping to yours, but in another sport we don't really talk much about, MMA, Conor McGregor is currently...
You are taking mine.
sorry, buddy.
It's fair.
Conor McGregor is being charged with 3 counts of assault. If anyone has not seen the video, he picked up a dolly and chucked it into the window of a bus full of fighters. Facial laceration for one of them, Michael Chiesa. But this all stems allegedly from somebody who got into it with one of his crew. And so the kind of rumor is, you know, this was like more of a retaliation thing. But also interesting, this was right after it was announced that he would be losing his belt. He hasn't fought in over 500 days. And finally, Dana White said, if you're not going to fight, we're stripping you of your title belt. And so he was a little upset, and kind of culmination of things in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. And who knows when Conor McGregor will fight. And if it is, it might not be for pay. It might be in a prison cell.
Ooh, yikes.
Interesting. Yeah, that stealing my thunder. So I will go to my second choice here. And everyone's favorite good old boy, Tim Tebow, on his first pitch in Double A, hits a 3-run bomb. So if you didn't hear enough of the when will Tim Tebow wear an MLB team jersey, it's going to be ramping up in a big way, I'm sure, as he hits a home run in his first at bat on his first pitch that he sees in Double A. So don't put it past Tim Tebow to be playing in the majors here this year.
That was my backup. That was my backup one too. So we were right on the same page.
Very in sync on a beautiful Friday morning. Anshu, what do you have for us, bro, by the way, to get us, send us off, will you?
All right. Well, I'm going to go back to the draft a little bit here. Rappaport came out today, said that Mason Rudolph's got visits with the Bills. He also has already met with the Chargers, Saints, Giants, Steelers, Pats, and Bengals.
What? Boy.
So, Mason Rudolph's one of my absolute favorites. I've been championing his cause all along, and it now looks like he's going to be a first-round pick. And given the Patriots trade for those 2 picks, I think that this is going to happen. Mike Lombardi also came out yesterday on his Ringer podcast and said that Lamar Jackson is more well thought of in league circles than in the media in the way that mocks show. So it seems like this guy's someone who's very well connected to the Patriots. I think that means we're going to be looking at 6 first round quarterbacks, which would be, I believe, a record. That is a ton. And it's going to be fascinating. I cannot wait. We're 3 weeks away from the draft. I'm at half mast. Let's get this thing going. I'm so pumped. And keep an eye on Mason Rudolph. And who knows, he might be in the black and orange next year.
real quick, just to piggyback that, if there's six quarterbacks that go in the first round in this draft, how many of those do you think are successful NFL quarterbacks?
Oh, so much of it depends on where you go. But I, you know, we're not Josh Allen fans here. This is not a Josh Allen podcast, so I'm going to take him off. I think that you can basically assume one to two of those other guys aren't going to work out. I love Josh Rosen. He's my by far number one for me. I think that Baker Mayfield's going to be good, assuming he goes to the right place. But I don't think anybody else is necessarily a guarantee. I like Rudolph, too. I think that Rudolph could end up being in the best position to succeed if he's sitting behind, you know, a Dalton or a Bradford or somebody for a year or two and learning, you know, and then having the offense be catered to him. Those are the guys that generally have more success. So we'll see. But I would say if you had to ask me, I would take three of those six to be successful.
Well, for reference, this reminds me, and Josh, I was going the same way with it, so we really are on the same page. That 99 draft, that was Couch and Akili Smith and Donovan McNabb, Culpepper, and Cade McNown.
Who was the guy that went to the Bears? Yeah,
Cade McNown.
Cade McNown.
So, like, out of those guys, right, I mean, that was supposed to be a similar class, you know, in terms of hype for it, and you probably, you know, Couch, McNabb, and Culpepper are your, so three out of five really turned into something.
Wait, did you just say Couch turned into
something? Oh, sorry. McNabb. Couch was off. My bad. My apologies. Did not mean to say that.
Yeah, he had a great
night. Need another cup of coffee here before this day kicks off. So McNabb and Culpepper.
You're just thinking about opening day, my friend.
Yeah, McNabb and Culpepper.
I get it.
Two out of five. So if you think, you know, that similar percentage, probably only two or three of these guys on this draft are going to pan out.
Yeah, I completely agree.
About the same. Well, guys, it's Friday. Let's get the weekend kicked off. Thank you guys for joining us here on The Leftovers. For Anshu Khanna and Dan Bauer, I'm Josh Dunn. We will see you guys on Monday.